Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live today from San Diego, from the studios of our affiliate KLSD, where this afternoon we're having a party down in Old Town from 4 to 7 o'clock at the Cosmopolitan Restaurant. Free appetizers sponsored by San Diego Kitchen and Bath. All kinds of cool stuff. So that's going to be fun. It's also the Mother's Day weekend coming up. In the third hour of our program, we're going to be talking with an old friend of mine, Marianne Williamson. She's going to drop by. And I'm going to be sharing with you with Julia Ward Howe's thoughts on Mother's Day and how this all came about. But first, it being Friday, and the first hour of our Friday program, as we have for I think over 3.5 years now, and going on 4 years, Senator Bernie Sanders, as always, taking your calls at 1-866-303-2270. You can drop into our live chat room at tomhartman.com and say hi. And so it's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Sanders, good morning.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Or good afternoon, I guess.
Afternoon here, it's morning where you are.
Yeah, you're in Burlington, Vermont. I'm here in San Diego, California today. Bernie, before we get into some of the issues of the day, a number of people have emailed and a couple of people on the air even asked me the question, why is Bernie an independent, not a Democrat?
Okay, and that's a fair question. When I was elected mayor of the city of Burlington, Vermont, the largest city in the state in 81, I won as an independent. I won 8 elections as an independent to the House of Representatives, and this last November I won as an independent to the U.S. Senate, being the first real independent elected there, perhaps ever. And the reason I'm an independent is pretty simple. What you have right now, especially in this country, is the Republican Party, which has become over the years a right-wing extremist party. There are exceptions to that, but I think that's fair to say that certainly the ideology of President Bush and many of the members in the Congress. And the Democratic Party has gone from here to there, but it's essentially a centrist party. There are some good people who I work very closely with who are progressive Democrats. By and large, I would say it's a centrist party. I think that what we need in this country are public officials who are prepared to stand up to big money, to represent the needs of the shrinking middle class, those people who are low income, and we've seen an increase in poverty in recent years, and be prepared to take on the powers that be. And while there are people in the Democratic Party who do that, and I work closely with them, I think it's fair to say that's not the thrust of the Democratic Party, which for many years has also gotten large campaign contributions and is not as strong as it should be, in my view, representing working families.
Yeah. Now, at various times, I've registered as a Democrat or registered as an independent. This particular year, I'm registered as an independent. I've raised a lot of money for the Democratic Party. I'm on the board, the advisory board of Progressive Democrats of America. I sort of caucus with the Democrats. You do the same.
I do the same. I sure do. I caucus with the Democrats. I get my committee assignments from the Democrats. I get my seniority from the Democrats. I go to the and I work very closely with many of the
Democrats. You started the Progressive Caucus.
And when I was in the House, I started the Progressive Caucus, which now has some 55 members, all of whom are Democrats, but me. But so, you know, I just think I feel comfortable representing the people of the state of Vermont as an independent, somebody who perhaps has a little bit more freedom than others in speaking out on the issues. And I'm comfortable doing that.
Speaking of the Democratic Party, the Democrats have been moving legislative agendas over the last couple of weeks. It seems like a little steam is going out of it. Prescription drugs, gas prices, trade, there's
a few
issues here.
Well, I think you're seeing a problem here. Is, you know, one of the problems you have, as I expect many listeners know, is that in the Senate, it takes really 60 votes to get anything done, because so long as you want to filibuster, you can't bring up a vote. So if you have a really important piece of legislation and you got 41 people who do not want it voted upon or do not want it passed, you kill it. That's basically the problem. We can't even, at this point, because of Republican opposition, raise the minimum wage to $7.25 an hour, which is just an obscenity. But that's the reality. But having said that, my concern is that what you are seeing in this country now is, I think, a strong rebellion against the right-wing extremism that we have seen over the last 6 years from Bush and the Republicans who, who led the House and the Senate. I think the American people have caught on that those people are primarily interested in the needs of large multinational corporations. The wealthiest people in the country could care less about the middle class, and certainly lower-income people or working people could care less about the environment. Got us into this horrendous and disastrous war in Iraq, and on it goes. And that's the good news. I think right-wing extremism is now on the defensive, and that's good. I think Democrats stand a very good chance to regain the White House and perhaps see their numbers in the House and the Senate increase, and that's positive. On the other hand, what I am not seeing and would like to see is a boldness on the part of the Democrats who are prepared to say, look, we are going to stand with the middle class. We know that throughout this country we have millions of people who are working longer hours for low wages. We know that our young people, everything being equal, will probably have a lower standard of living than their parents if we don't change economic reality in this country. It is a disgrace that we have the highest rate of childhood poverty by far, at the same time as Bush has given hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest 1%. We treat our veterans, by and large, shamefully, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, look at the issues that are out there right now. Democrats have not at this point been prepared to say we are going to rescind the tax breaks that went to the wealthiest 1% and use that money, A, for deficit reduction, but more importantly, to deal with the very pressing needs of the middle class in terms of children, making child care affordable, making college education affordable, making sure that at least all of our kids have health care, protecting veterans' needs and so forth and so on. So I don't think the Democrats were prepared to say, sorry, at a time when the gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider, you can't have those huge tax breaks. It's absurd that go to the millionaires and billionaires. You're seeing this issue with the oil companies right now. In Vermont now, gas for regular gas is $3 a gallon. It's in some places in the country higher than that. In a rural state like Vermont, that means that a woman drives 50 miles to work and 50 miles back, which is certainly not unusual. I mean, they are taking money right out of their paycheck. If they've got some kind of meager pay increase, they're losing that, giving it to ExxonMobil. Have you heard the Democratic leadership saying, wait a second, this is absurd? Now, the reality is that if we did anything strong, if we pass a windfall profits tax or any other strong measure, certainly Bush would veto it. That's true. I don't think we can get that legislation through. I don't know, even though in the Senate you can get a vote on it. But we should make the effort. We should let the American people know that while we're trying to raise CAFE standards, get automobiles in this country, which give us the kind of mileage per gallon that we should have, that in the meantime, at least, we've got to stand up to the oil companies. There was a very disturbing vote from my perspective earlier in the week, on the prescription drug reimportation, an issue that I and a number of members in the House and Senate have been working on for many years, simply says, look, it is absurd that in the United States we pay far, far higher prices for prescription drugs, the same exact medicine made in the same factory by the same company. We pay much higher prices than they do in Canada or in Germany, depending upon the drug. It could be two times, three times, whatever it is. So we say, look, if we're bringing in food from all over the world, we're bringing in products from China, from Mexico, all over the world, how come we can't bring in FDA-regulated medicines from Canada, for God's sakes, from Germany? Why can't we do that? Oh, my goodness. Well, the pharmaceutical industry is the most powerful lobby on Capitol Hill. They have spent hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in lobbying, campaign contributions. We couldn't win that. We lost that vote 49-40. Very, very disturbing to me. So, and then, just reading today, now you may have seen in the papers, Tom, Democratic leadership reaching some kind of agreement on trade. The trade issue is a very important issue to me. Many of us campaigned heavily on the position that our current trade policies are a disaster, permanent normal trade relations with China, NAFTA, CAFTA, that we are losing good-paying jobs in this country. Large corporations are throwing our people out on the street, moving abroad. And that's one of the reasons why the middle class is shrinking. And then we read in the paper that the Democratic leadership appears to have reached an agreement with the Bush administration. And what I can tell you, absolutely, is there has been zero discussion within the Democratic caucus. Many members who have been concerned about this issue were not consulted about it. So some of us are not happy about that and are going to fight back strongly on it.
This is on the front page of the New York Times, at least the electronic edition today. Bush and Democrats in a court on trade deals.
Yeah, but I can tell you.
This really boils down to campaign contributions, doesn't it?
I think it largely does. Whether, the trade issues are something that all the multinational corporations have been pushing for years. They love globalization in the sense that why do you want to pay an American worker $20 an hour when you can go to China and pay somebody 50 cents an hour? It's a good deal.
Indeed. Yep. It's our brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders with us here on the Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio. Our number 866-303-2270, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room. We'll be back with your calls for Senator Bernie Sanders in just a moment. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
Tom Hartman here with you, the Tom Hartman Program, our brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, taking your calls at 1-866-303-2270, the telephone number. Bill in Los Angeles, California, you are live with Senator Sanders.
Bernie?
Yes.
I fear that a future demonstration against the Iraq war will be viewed by the executive branch as an insurrection. Demonstrators could then be declared enemy combatants under the Military Commissions Act. Bernie, when you and others would inevitably emerge from Congress to defend the people, you too could be declared supporters of the insurrection and arrested. Same for Supreme Court justices. Bernie, as America's senator, what can you do now to prevent any despot from seizing
the government? I think we got to calm down a little bit. No, I don't agree with your scenario. I don't think the people who are going to be demonstrating against the war are going to be arrested. And I mean, I'm more than aware of the horrendous position of the Bush administration, but I think...
But legally, they could be right now.
Well, I mean, let's not get carried away. I mean, there have been huge... as you and I have talked about, Tom, there's sometimes a tinge of paranoia that is out there. We have won the last election, so we have a lot of work in front of us. I would hope that people who are opposed to this war, as I am, will come out in large numbers. I hope we end this war, it's a terrible war, as soon as we possibly can. But let's not get too paranoid.
Okay. Sounds like a plan here. Michael in Maypack, New York. You are live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Hi, Senator.
Hi.
Well, actually, Michael, I think the question behind the question of the last caller was, and let me just put Michael back on hold for just a second, is can the Military Commissions Act be rolled back? I mean, some of these provisions are just draconian.
I think given the fact that you have an administration which obviously does not respect the Constitution, which day after day after day takes actions to undermine basic civil liberties and constitutional rights, I hope we will take a look at every single one of these provisions and repeal what Bush has done. So that's the answer, yes.
Okay, good.
But I mean, having said that, sometimes there are people who, think the Karl Rove presses a button and suddenly all kinds of things happen. So we don't want to get overly paranoid, I think.
Okay. Michael in Maypack, New York. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi again. Hi, Bernie. I feel like I'm almost a Vermonter. I come from Northern Lake George, a great part of the world. At any rate, my question is, why have there been so few Congressional Medal of Honor winners from the Iraq conflict?
That is a good question, and I honestly I don't know the answer to that, Michael. I'm sorry.
Marilyn in Santa Monica, California. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, and it's a pleasure to talk to such heroic men. At the same time, I'm thrilled Here's my question. I make a lot of phone calls to my representative, to my senators. I have Dane Harmon. That's a disappointment in a lot of ways. And I make a lot of phone calls, sometimes at the behest of organizations who email me and organizations I belong to. Progressive Democrats of Los Angeles, by the way, and it's fabulous. And more people should join us. But do those phone calls end up getting ignored?
No.
Or when I do a lot, when I call a lot and it's me?
Generally speaking, the more pressure that the grassroots puts on the Congress, the better it is. And I know that people wish that we could have instantaneous response, that Congress would do the right thing tomorrow, and that's not going to happen. But just take a deep breath and take a look at what grassroots activism has done with regarding to the war in Iraq. There was a vote yesterday in the House where the overwhelming majority of Democrats basically said, bring the troops home within 9 months. A few months ago, that would not have been possible. And one of the reasons for that is strong grassroots activism, that because the people down home are speaking up on this issue that Congress is following. And it's not only Democrats. Tom, you read, no doubt, that there were 11 so-called moderate Republicans who went to the White House this week who said that they are losing patience with the Bush administration. And that's huge, because if the Republicans begin to break with them, then the war is over. And what these guys are doing also is going back to their districts, and people are saying, sorry, this guy should not have gotten us into the war in the first place. It has been a disaster. We're sick and tired of it. Bring the troops home. So to answer Marilyn's question, yes, grassroots activism works. It never works as quickly as you want it to do, but we've got to keep up the pressure.
And if you call once a week, they don't start saying, oh, there's that nutcase again.
I mean, if you're polite and intelligent, no. I would say that the average office, regardless of political position, will honor that, those calls and respect them.
Great. Alan in Paulsboro, Washington, we have about a minute left. Alan, you're live with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Hey, given the political realities that vote, the 9 months didn't pass, and that the filibuster you were talking about earlier, my suggestion is to do a little Machiavellian strategy and simply ask the president to come up with a tax, maybe call it a victory tax or a patriot tax, to actually pay for the war. And I think he would determine that it was time to end the war rather quickly.
Well, that's a good point, Alan. This is a president who has led us into spending something like $500 billion, and that number is going to go up at the same time as he gives tax breaks to his wealthy friends. And you're right. If the wealthiest people in this country had to pay for this war, it would probably end a lot quicker.
This is a war that's being paid for by our children and grandchildren.
Yep, that's exactly right.
27 minutes past the hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Our Brunch with Bernie hour, the first hour of the Friday program, Tom Harmon program. We'll be back with more calls from you for Bernie in just a moment.
Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour, our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your questions. Asher in Portland, Oregon, you're live with Senator Sanders. Asher?
Yes, Tom.
Yeah.
Hi. Senator Sanders, I'm proud to be talking with you. I'm a registered independent. I'm from Portland, Oregon. And it's just really exciting to speak with you, another of my fellow brothers. I have a couple of questions. First, in a lot of my political science classes, we always talked about reclaiming vocabulary, how certain words and vocabulary has been slandered by right-wing and other opposition forces out there. I'm wondering how we can rebuild and reclaim the vocabulary, and if there's any discussion on that anywhere.
And certainly I think we can agree that the Republicans have done an excellent job in using vocabulary at a time when political life centers around 12-second sound bites and photo opportunities. For example, we hear over and over again the so-called death tax, and the goal of that is to make people think that the inheritance tax applies to the vast majority of the people. Gee, when you die, your family is going to be just taxed very, very heavily, without bothering to mention that we're down to the top 0.3% who would be impacted by the so-called death tax. But your point is absolutely right. We need a good vocabulary to articulate what our vision is to America.
Robert in New York City, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, good afternoon, Tom, and Senator Sanders. I look forward to hearing the both of you on Friday. My question is, what alternative and what remedy does the Congress have to stop this obfuscation and refusal to answer questions by the Attorney General, and his adamant refusal to supply the documents that they require to do their oversight?
The reception is not quite so clear. The question is what remedies...
The question is, when Alberto Gonzalez, as he did particularly yesterday with Robert Wexler, Wexler said, who put Iglesias on the list? Was it this guy? And he named everybody in the department, and Gonzalez is like, none of them. Wasn't the president, wasn't the vice president. And basically refused to answer the question. What can Congress do when Gonzalez comes before Congress and refuses to honestly and clearly and openly answer questions?
Well, obviously Congress has the power of subpoena, which I think you're going to see likely being used more and more. And I think if there is a feeling that Gonzalez is not telling the truth or obfuscating the reality of his office, then I think the call should go out for his resignation. That is my view. I think he has not served honorably, and I myself think he should be asked to resign.
So the principle, he can't be held in contempt of Congress or something like that, or is that something that's very rare?
That's very rare, yeah.
Yeah, very difficult to do. John in Los Angeles, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning. It's great to talk to you. My first question is, since Halliburton has discussed going to Dubai and moving their offices over there, I just wonder if any subpoenas have been issued yet to stop them from leaving the country so they can be interviewed. And also, if the Democrats do listen to the voters, why do they keep pushing this agenda that they want to give all these illegal immigrants amnesty when all we have to do is enforce the laws on the books and they'll leave anyway?
In terms of Dubai, what you have is, Tom, this is almost incomprehensible if you stop and you think about it, that a company which was headed by the Vice President of the United States is now leaving America in order to avoid taxes and other responsibilities in settling in another foreign country. Is that unbelievable or what?
It is rather astounding, yeah. Not to mention that their stock value has about tripled since the war started.
And they have received all kinds of no-bid contracts. This clearly is an issue that has got to be pursued vigorously, not only in terms of making sure that Halliburton is held accountable for all of their actions, including that the no-bid contracts that they have received. And I think the caller raises a good point on that. But just the symbolism of the vice president's company moving outside of the United States of America, then you talk about these guys are the ultra patriots, aren't they?
Yeah, well, it's a great way for them to say, we don't have to produce those files.
Right.
Because
but just
the
symbolism.
Are completely different.
Symbolism.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty grim.
I mean, and then they criticize people for not being patriotic.
Yeah.
In terms of the illegal immigration issue, you got to, this is a huge issue. There's a lot of controversy about it. I think the key issues here are that you have to enforce the borders. There's no question about that. And we have not done that. Number two, you have got to hold employers responsible when they hire illegal immigrants. It is, given the fact that we have a great law and order administration, it is quite amazing how few press conferences the president has held in front of agricultural enterprises or factories where everybody knows that the people inside there are illegal immigrants who are serving the function, among other things. They're getting exploited themselves, but they're forcing wages down for others. But somehow we haven't had so much focus on that. In fact, the Bush administration has backed off that issue, and we've got to deal with that. And then you have the most contentious issue is what you do with 11 to 12 million people who are in this country today. And there's going to be a lot of debate on that. There is no simple solution. Do I think that those people in the middle of the night are going to be, the houses are going to be raided, they're going to be thrown out of this country? It's not going to happen, and it should not happen. But what the nuance of what does happen and how you deal with that is what the debate will be about.
Yeah, and we do need to have a national conversation about that.
We do.
Lynn in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, I'm a doctor of pharmacy, and this week you voted, the only person that stood up and voted against the pharmaceutical companies paying money to the FDA. I don't know if you're aware, but the federal government has been going into compounding pharmacies and raiding them with guns and patients having to put their hands up. And even though a judge decided for the compounding pharmacists, saying that we've been doing this for hundreds of years. Kennedy hasn't proposed another piece of legislation to get rid of compounding pharmacists. And it's very scary to me. You talked about the pharmaceutical companies paying hundreds of millions of dollars to lobby these people.
Yes. Well, the pharmaceutical industry is by far the most powerful lobby on Capitol Hill. And the truth of the matter is they never lose. They've never lost. They have won every battle they have been in, and the results are that the American people pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. They wrote the Medicare Part D prescription drug bill. They've been able to fend off prescription drug reimportation. And as the caller indicates, I mean, one of the reasons clearly is that they have something like 1,200 or 1,000 lobbyists on Capitol Hill. And have spent just unbelievable sums of money for lobbying, campaign contributions, and advertising. They never lose. And we're going to have to really develop a strong grassroots effort to make sure that the American people get a fair shake in terms of the prices they have to pay for prescription drugs.
Is she right that you were the only guy in the Senate who voted against this thing?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. I congratulate you. Doug, in Staten Island, New York, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Bernie, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I've given to you campaigns, and I just admire your great character in remembering we the people. If you can just clarify for the people, just as a start there, that the by my count, the Progressive Caucus, unlike what all these prognosticators said about the election, that they were centrists, basically, that were elected. By my count, the Progressive Caucus is the largest caucus right now in the House. I don't know about the Senate. I admire what you do about health and everything. I mean, we're number 37 according to the WHO, the World Health Organization. We're between Costa Rica and Slovenia in the health department. I wanted to ask you something. I just saw a colloquy between Senator Reid and Senator McConnell and Senator Warner. Senator Warner said he was speaking for members on both sides of the aisle. He'd like to see the monies appropriated completely, not bifurcated, and he'd like to have
this is the for
president.
The occupation of Iraq.
He'd like to see, regarding Iraq, and he'd like to see the president. Not with instructions, but have the president come before September, before the recess, and come and give us an update and see if there's any new strategies that need to be employed. Kind of like, I guess, Pablo, that they can go out in the and just, you know, give to their constituencies. Are you aware of this? Are the Democrats starting to back down?
Well, there are very strongly anti-war Democrats. Russ Feingold certainly has been a leader on this. That Kennedy has been very strong. I've been there. And there are some conservative Democrats whose views are not that far away from some of the Republicans. I suspect that Mr. Warner is talking to the conservative Democrats. The dilemma that Senator Reid has, the majority leader has, is he's going to need 60 votes to get something. And that's very tough when you have only 50 votes even on your side. Bottom line is, I hope that at the very least we'll be able to vote on a strong bill to cut off funding is to end the war and bring our troops home as soon as possible, similar to what took place in the House, and we'll go on from there.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie Hour on the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio, 45 minutes past the hour.
Truth in Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Coming on.
Some days you gotta dance and give it up when you get the chance. Cause when the world doesn't make no sense and you're feeling just a little too tense, gotta loosen up those chains and dance.
9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, the Tom Hartman Radio Program on Air America Radio. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Sanders, the independent from Vermont, Jim in Anaheim, California. You're listening on K-Talk. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Senator. Thanks for being on my side. At any rate, my statement, as I understand the troop withdrawal, we will leave enough troops in Iraq to protect American interests. That's the long way of spelling oil. On these bills, is there any way to make sure that we don't protect the oil operations that are going to be divided up between the four, or at least make sure the only of the Iraqi people decide who's going to run their oil so that we don't end up defending American interest, which would be the oil operations? Why not make sure that they hire the mercenaries we're paying now when our troops come home?
Well, you raise some good points. I mean, right now, given the fact that the president can veto any serious legislation, we really don't have the votes to do the right thing in terms of getting our troops out as soon as we can and making sure that the oil does not go to American oil companies. So the best that we can do right now is continue to put the pressure on the president, pass the strongest legislation that we possibly can, and continue to see, as I believe we are, the American people saying to the president, you've got to stop what you're doing right now. And I think you are seeing, as I mentioned a moment ago, more and more Republicans putting pressure on the president and saying, Mr. President, if you don't change your policies, we're going to split with you because we're going to lose our elections in 08. And I think we just got to keep the pressure pouring on.
Andre in Columbia, South Carolina, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie. How you doing?
Good.
Good. I'm an activist here in Columbia, South Carolina, also an entrepreneur without health insurance who needs surgery right now. So I just wanted to say that before I ask the question. In light of all of our Democratic candidates, you know, standing behind a universal health care program, also in light of the largest lobbying group, the pharmaceuticals, is it possible that we can get, as consumers, a Bill of Rights which will allow us, if we get universal health care, to protect ourselves against doctors, tort reform, and pharmaceutical companies who stand to become, you know, even richer?
Well, that's a great question, Andre. Right now, as I mentioned earlier on other issues, you have a president who is deeply indebted to the insurance companies and to the pharmaceutical companies, and you have many members of the Senate, virtually, I think every Republican would vote against serious health care reform. What we are in a position to do right now is to stop the privatization of Medicare. We are in a position right now to, at the very least, expand health care access to the children of this country. We have the highest rate of childhood poverty. Millions of kids in this country do not have any health insurance, and I'll be sponsoring legislation which will make sure that virtually every child in America has health insurance. We are working on a national health care program so that the United States of America joins the rest of the industrialized world and says that health care is a right of all people. That's something that we should do, given the fact that we spend now twice as much per person on health care as do the people of any other country. So the answer is, I hope that within the coming year we're going to make some progress. The opposition from the White House, from Republicans, from some Democrats will be very, very strong. And we just got to keep up the pressure so that we end the disgraceful situation we are in. I think Doug mentioned a little while ago that our statistics in terms of issues like longevity, infant mortality, is just very poor compared to the international community. So we have an enormous amount of work to do, but the opposition is very strong.
And a lot of that means call your senators and call your member of Congress and keep the heat on.
Healthcare must be considered a right of all people, period.
Not a privilege.
Right.
Well, very well said. James in Chandler, Arizona. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Senator. I just had a suggestion for a way to address some of these problems that we've been having trying to get bills for the continuing war. One of the things that we're always going to beat over the head with is that the people that oppose Bush's plans don't support the war. So what I was thinking is maybe we could take that club away from him by doing something like break the bill up into individual bills that address things that specifically support the troops, things like support for the VA, reform for Walter Reed, funding for body armor, things like that.
But James, that's a very good point, and what I am happy to tell you is I think what you're going to see out of this Congress, and I have worked with a number of the veterans organizations, the VFW, the DAV, and other veterans organizations who understand that we are making significant progress in coming up with the largest a funding increase for the Veterans Administration be far, far higher than what the president requested. So we are making progress, and your point is a good point. We have to make sure that the soldiers and their families know that we are on the side of our soldiers and the veterans, yet want them to come home as soon as they possibly can.
Yeah. Support our troops, bring them home.
Right.
It's a very simple slogan. Senator Bernie Sanders, Bernie, as always, thanks so much for being with us and taking all our listeners' calls today.
Okay. Take care, Bob.
Great talking with you. 56 minutes past the hour. Up next, you're not going to believe what Gonzo said to Wexler.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio. Program on Air America Radio. Talk radio for the rest of us.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. Amazing stuff going on with Gonzo Gate and Dick Cheney just now speaking on an aircraft carrier in the Gulf, basically rattling the saber at Iran. A lot of us thought this had gone away. We thought, okay, well, you know, we've got a couple ships there and everything was in position for the strike, but the sense of the American people, the will of the American people, had caused the Bush administration to back down. We had Scott Ritter on this program. Well, a number of things. Cy Hirsch was on this program back 4, 5, 6, 8 months ago, saying that in March or April, the U.S. was going to attack Iran, or at least from the air, bomb what they view as the nuclear facilities in Iran that Iran insists are only enriching uranium up to 3% or in that neighborhood for use in nuclear power. And the administration is saying, no, no, we think that they're enriching it much higher than that to make a nuclear bomb. And may well be. I mean, who knows? We just don't know. So Dick Cheney on an aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf this morning, waving his hands around. He says, with two carrier strike groups in the Gulf, we're sending clear messages to friends and adversaries alike. The United States will stand with others to prevent Iran from gaining nuclear weapons and dominating this region. Sort of like we stood with others to prevent Pakistan from getting nuclear weapons or to prevent North Korea from getting nuclear weapons. Oh, well, Pakistan is our friend and North Korea, well, you know, they don't have any oil. It's very simple. They don't have any oil. So your priorities are a little different. But probably, you know, looking at this, at the political calculus of this, probably one of the most effective things that Dick Cheney could do to change the subject from the impeachment of Dick Cheney, which Congressman, actually a number of members of Congress now have signed on to Dennis Kucinich's legislation. Well, a small number. I think he has four co-sponsors, but it's slowly picking up steam. Anyhow, the word is on the street from the investigations into Dick Cheney and, frankly, the investigations into Karl Rove. The best thing he could do to change the topic, to get all the networks, all the television, which is most people's source of news, all the television talking about something else, is to start a war in Iran, is to start bombing Iran. And you got John McCain going around singing bomb, 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 Iran. In the meantime, Gonzogate rolls on, and I just want to, you know, mention, bring up these two points and share them with you, and then we'll go to your phone calls. It's Anything Goes Friday. Marianne Williamson will be with us in the first segment of the next hour to talk about how Mother's Day actually originated, which is fascinating, and Juliet Ward Howe's Mother's Day proclamation, and we will talk about that as well, but also be taking your calls throughout the day. But Gonzo, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, speaking before Robert Wexler, before the House Judiciary Committee yesterday. This is amazing.
The gentleman from Florida. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your permission, Mr. Attorney General, I'd like to follow the chairman's questions regarding Mr. Iglesias.
Now, David Iglesias, the fired U.S. attorney from New Mexico, who, by the way, said all roads lead to Karl Rove yesterday, day before yesterday.
Understand it correctly, you testified that Karl Rove talked to you about voter fraud in New Mexico in fall 2006?
Yes, New Mexico and two other jurisdictions, that's correct.
Mr. Iglesias is selected for the termination list in early November 2006?
I think on Election Day. His name, well, I don't know when he was selected. I wasn't involved in that process.
Right.
But
it appears on
looking at the documents.
Yeah, a little weaseling here.
Right.
He first appears on the list on Election Day.
And it's your testimony. You did not select him to put, you did not select Mr. Iglesias to be put on the list, correct?
His name was brought forward to me, recommended, right. Along with others.
You did not select him. Did Mr. Sampson select him?
Now, let's go through all the lists of the people who had the authority.
Mr. Sampson was charged with coordinating this effort.
He didn't select them.
I have not spoken with Mr. Sampson about
right.
This.
Did former Deputy Attorney General Mr. Comey, did he select them?
Of course, he wasn't in the department at that time. So
he didn't select.
I don't think he selected them.
That's right. Did Mr. McNulty select them?
I haven't asked that question, yeah. Mr. McNulty.
Mr. McNulty told us he didn't select them. Did Mr. Margolis select them?
Again, I haven't spoken with Mr. Margolis.
We've talked a lot about the president's authority to have who he wants where. Did the president select Mr. Iglesias to be put on the termination
list?
No, the president didn't select him. Did the vice president select him to put him, Mr. Iglesias, on the termination list?
No.
Okay, so the president didn't, the vice president didn't, you, the attorney general, didn't, all of the assistant and former deputy attorney generals didn't put Mr. Iglesias on the termination list.
This is getting very strange here. Robert Wexler from Florida, very, very upset with Gonzo, who will not answer questions about who did.
So who did?
Well, what's important, Congressman, is that there was a consensus recommendation made to me. Whether or not how we got on the list,
a group of people put him on the list?
What's less important is that I accepted a recommendation and I made the decision. I accept responsibility for the decision.
You made a decision, according to yourself, as to accepting the termination list. But you've also said you didn't put him on the list. So somebody else, other than you, other than the president, other than the vice president, other than every deputy attorney general that's come to this committee, put him on the list.
Congressman.
But with all due respect, Mr. Attorney General, you won't tell the American people who put Mr. Iglesias on the list to be fired. It's a national secret, isn't it?
Congressman, if I knew the answer to that question, I would provide you the answer. I've not spoken with the individuals.
Hey, so you don't know who put it on the list, Mr. Iglesias. Why was Mr. Iglesias put on the list by this mystery person?
Well, again, I wasn't surprised to see Mr. Iglesias' name recommended to me based upon conversations that I had with a senior senator from New Mexico. He had lost confidence in Mr. Iglesias. Let me just say, Mr. Iglesias' story is a great one. It's the American dream, and there are many good...
So he slaps him, and then he praises him, and then he says, well, Pete Domenici, maybe he, but he doesn't have the authority to put him on the list. But we started this whole thing with you talked with Karl Rove. Yeah.
Things about his performance, and I very much admire him as a person.
But you won't tell the American people who put him on a list to terminate his employment.
I accept responsibility for
this. But you accept responsibility for making the decision ultimately to accept the termination list, but you will not come forth and tell the American people who put Mr. Iglesias on the list to be fired.
Out of respect for the integrity of this investigation and the investigation occurring at the Department of Justice, I have not made that inquiry with respect to other fact witnesses.
Now, this is the ultimate weasel. You know, I ran the department, and something happened here, but I haven't asked the people who work for me what happened. Now, I'm not looking at... I know nothing.
But you were okay with firing him, but you won't tell us who made the recommendation to fire him.
I think I was justified in relying upon the senior leadership in the department, as I understand.
Do you know what Mr. Moschella told this committee about why Mr. Iglesias was put on the list? He said the rationale was because he was an absentee landlord. Are you familiar with that?
I'm familiar with Mr. Moschella's public testimony.
Right. He delegated authority, apparently, Mr. Iglesias.
Well, let me just say this. I did not make the decision with respect to Mr. Iglesias.
Here we go again.
You have made any decision, Mr.
Service.
You have been very clear about that.
I accept full responsibility for this.
These are his two mantras. I didn't make any decisions. I'm fully responsible. Please don't look at that man behind the curtain. Only look at me.
But you won't tell us who put Mr. Iglesias on that list.
You would have a better opportunity and to access.
I would.
The committee would.
Are you the
Congress.
Attorney General? Do you run the Department of Justice?
Yes, I do. And it's been frustrating to me to not be able to ask these kinds of questions. But I want to respect the integrity of this investigation and the investigations going on in the department.
I'm not going to ask the questions. I'm going to let you guys ask the questions. But when you ask the questions, I'm not going to give you an answer. Wexler isn't pleased.
If we all came up here and had the same...
When did the investigation in the department start?
If we all came up here...
It started after they were fired, didn't it?
And had the same testimony about events that occurred over 2 years, you would look at that with great suspicion. You would wonder,
sir,
have you guys talked to each other about facts?
Sir, you know the
reason,
answers.
I have
you
not.
You know them, and it has nothing to do with an investigation that's occurring after these people were fired, because you know the answer before they were fired, because you know who put them on the list, but you won't tell us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, and at that point, Gonzo just kind of leans back and goes, ah, oh, well. So we're gonna take a break here, and when we come back from this break, we are going to we'll go to your phone calls. Any topic you want to talk about. There's a lot on the table, a lot of news throughout the day. I'll be sprinkling in as we go through the day, you know, what's up and what's happening. This, I believe, what you just heard is the beginning of the unraveling. It opened with Karl Rove, and it ended with the Gonzo going, I don't know. This, I think, is the beginning of the end of this administration. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
CBS News now, in addition to firing General John Batiste, who had the temerity. I mean, this is a guy who resigned from the Army in order to be able to speak out against the war, which, you know, pretty impressive thing to have the courage to do that, being willing to speak out against the war. And everybody knew it. He made no secret of it. CBS hired him as a consultant on military affairs. And now he showed up in one of these VoteVets.org ads, and they fired him, and they replaced him with a person who is consistently willing to, Nicole Wallace, to put forward the talking points, the Bush administration, the White House talking points. She says, the Democrats have to walk a fine line and be careful. People don't want to turn on the TV and see every story about the obstruction of people trying to do things. She said, well, you know, people ask me all the time, do they, the White House, get it? How do they know how bad things are? The answer is yes. This was on the CBS News of December 12th, 06. And October 23rd last year, she says, on the CBS Evening News, at the end of the day, no matter how discontent some voters are, they really don't want to see Democrats in control of the Congress. This is the person who CBS has hired to replace John Batiste because he had the temerity to appear in this ad. Here's the audio for this ad.
I have always said that I will listen to the requests of our commanders on the ground.
Mr. President, you did not listen. You continue to pursue a failed strategy that is breaking our great Army and Marine Corps. I left the Army in protest in order to speak out. Mr. President, you have placed our nation in peril. Our only hope is that Congress will act now to protect our fighting men and women.
How dare he say what he's been saying for, what, 2 years, year and a half, something, ever since he resigned? How dare he say that? What? He's speaking out. We can't have that. We'll put a good Bush toady in there. Yeah. And CBS News wonders why they're tanking in the ratings and why the mainstream news is becoming increasingly irrelevant. Bill in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hey, you know, I suggested to you that the Democrats need an issue that would completely and totally differentiate them from the Republicans. And I suggest the issue would be the war on drugs. All the Democrats have to do is come up for drug legalization, and the Republicans would predictably defend prohibition on religious moral grounds.
Yeah, and the problem is that there's not anything close to the consensus on that. I mean, philosophically, I totally agree with you, Bill. Practically speaking, politically speaking, the Democrats would be much, much safer taking on something like national health care, where there is a broad consensus. The war on drugs is sufficiently nuanced. It's a sufficiently subtle thing for the average person. I don't think the average person gets it, that the war on drugs is really a war on poor people. You've got people in impoverished neighborhoods who have the entrepreneurial spirit, the entrepreneurial streak in them. I mean, this is something that's I think just, you know, human nature. Hey, figure out how to do some trade, I've got this, do you have that? They want to do business. But because of the racism that's built into our society, because of the classism that's built into our society, they really don't have an opportunity to start a business, to start a corner business. They can't get a loan from the bank. So what do? They become entrepreneurs in the drug trade. And this the war on drugs, in my mind, and I'm sure yours as well, Bill, is as much a war against poor people as anything else, and particularly people of color. But the problem is that the average American doesn't know that. You and I have a lot of education to do before, and frankly, I think the Democratic Party, before that could become the kind of issue that the Democrats could use to differentiate themselves. I think health care is one that they can use to differentiate themselves. The war right now is one that they're using to differentiate themselves. Although, frankly, the Republicans are going to jump on this because the Republicans, and this is the weird catch-22, the Republicans have figured out that if this occupation, I've got to stop calling it a war, and we all need to tell every single Democrat to stop calling this a war. The war ended on May 1st, 2003, when we took down the country of Iraq. That's the end of a war. That's when the occupation began. This four-year occupation of Iraq has failed. And the Republicans are getting it. Every Republican member of the House of Representatives, because 100% of them are up for re-election. They're re-elected every 2 years. They're all up for re-election in 2008. And a number of Republicans in the Senate, like Norm Coleman and Gordon Smith, who are up for re-election in 2008, because only roughly a third of the Senate gets re-elected every 2 years, because they all serve six-year terms. So you've got these Republicans in the Senate who are looking at re-election, and you've got every single Republican in the House looking at reelection, and they're swallowing hard, and they're saying, okay, we've got to go along with this Democratic plan because it will end the war. And it's this incredible irony that the Democrats are doing the right thing. They're pushing to end this the occupation. See, there I did it again. The Democrats are pushing to end the occupation quickly, to stop the death, to stop the bloodshed, to stop the carnage. Let's have a political solution, because that's how occupations are invariably resolved, is with a political solution. I mean, you look all over the world. You see this over and over and over again. How do you either pull out or you engage in some sort of a political process that allows there to be some sort of balance, some sort of treaty, a truce, as it were. And it's going to require a political solution. And so what the Democrats are promoting is going to be the best thing for the Republicans in the elections of 08. And you've got a bunch of Republicans who have figured this out. And the Democrats, oddly enough, in doing the right thing, are probably, if you look at it from purely at the window of November of 2008, doing something that's going to politically hurt them. But they're willing to do that, just like Lyndon Johnson was willing to lose the South, because it was the right thing. It's the right thing to do. 27 minutes past
the hour. The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Unless Alberto Gonzalez says no. Well, unless Alberto Gonzalez is listening in. Andy, welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Monica Goodling. You'll recall she is the graduate of the right-wing conservative religious law school, Pat Robertson School, Regency University, Regent University, that has 140-some-odd of its graduates. This one of the most lowly, poorly ranked law schools in America, has over 140 of its graduates highly placed in the Bush administration and in the Justice Department. She has resigned from the Justice Department and said that she will not testify unless she is given immunity. She was given immunity by Congress, and the Justice Department is investigating her, and they said, okay, we'll let her speak, but it had to go before a federal judge. That federal judge, U.S. District Judge Thomas Hogan, today, just hours ago, gave approval for Monica Goodling to testify before Congress. This could be the John Dean moment. This could be when the truth teller comes before Congress and says, yep, here's what's really going on. This is going to be a fascinating one to watch. When you talk about must-see TV, that's going to be a big one. It's Anything Goes Friday. Any topic you want to talk about, whatever it may be, give us a shout and we'll get to it. Jeff in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
You there?
Jeff? Yeah.
Sorry.
You're welcome.
I've just got a couple quick things to say, but before I do, I want to tell everybody that tomorrow is the National Association of Letter Carriers annual food drive. So remember to put some food out in bags, in front of your house.
Okay.
And, Michael Moore's new film, Sicko, all about the healthcare industry, comes out right on the 19th. So I urge everybody to go see
that. The 19th of June?
Of this month.
Of May.
May 19th. I don't know if it's in select cities or what, but look for it and check it out. And then Al Gore's new book, Assault on Reason, will be coming out soon, and you can pre-order it over at BuzzFlash.com.
Okay, great. Yeah, and BuzzFlash.com is a great source for books because not only is it a great news source, but that's how they fund the site rather than advertisers. So, yeah. Jeff, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for the heads up. Good one. Andrew in Playa del Rey, California.
Hi, thanks for having me on for a moment. I just wanted to pick up something that Bernie was talking about and talked about last week as well, which is the need to have a supermajority in Congress.
Right.
I'm always amazed that we Democrats, liberals seem to play fair while the Republicans use every possible edge. For instance, they didn't have a supermajority when they managed to get two Supreme Court justices approved, and they cajoled and they threatened and they got it done. Also,
actually,
when the Republicans ran Congress, they didn't allow
amendments,
so there'd be
no
poison.
Didn't they end up? Didn't my recollection? I may be wrong on this, but my recollection is that on the Roberts and the Alito nominees, they got more than 60 votes in the Senate in both cases.
I don't think that's the case, but it's my point is also that, you know, they didn't allow amendments, so you wouldn't have a poison pill on a reimportation bill. It's just that we don't seem to play on the same playing field that the Republicans do. I mean, they didn't even have a majority when they impeached Clinton.
Yeah. What was happening, good point. What was happening was that the Republicans, when the Republicans controlled Congress by a slim majority, and they actually lost that control when Jim Jeffords, the Republican from Vermont, decided to go independent. And, you know, fascinating, by the way, some of the things that Jim Jeffords had to say at the time and about that. When Jim Jeffords decided to go independent and flipped Congress, they didn't even have a majority. And yet they would scream, filibuster, filibuster. And, you know, which is, I suppose, accurate. But the bottom line is that when you don't have that 60 votes to be able to stop debate, which is technically a filibuster, the Republicans constantly were using that word. The Democrats are not. And this is another good point about the need for language, the need for, you know, to use good language and get that out. I have an audio clip here of Jim Jeffords. This is fascinating. Jim Jeffords, no longer the senator. In fact, Bernie Sanders is sitting in his seat now. Jim Jeffords is retired from the United States Senate. He's a Republican. As I think I said on the air once, the only Republican I've ever voted for in my whole entire life. And a very good and decent man who was so decent that when Bush took over, when Bush became president in 2001, he was so horrified by the direction the Republican Party had gone, he left the party altogether and changed the power, the balance of power in the Senate to flip it into the hands of the Democrats. And this, Jim Jeffords, when he was still a senator on Vermont Public Radio, being interviewed on an evening program, a local program on Vermont Public Radio, being interviewed about why Bush went to war. And this is a pretty profound and pretty insightful comment by Senator Jeffords.
But does the situation now in Iraq?
This starts out with a question from I don't know the name of the host, but the local host for Vermont Public Radio, and then it goes to Mr. Jeffords' answer.
But does the situation now in Iraq essentially show that he made the right decision?
I don't believe so. I was against it at the beginning, and I'm still against what invading Iraq.
Now keep in mind, this was almost three or four years ago that Jeffords said this.
I think it's created huge problems. I feel that we should never have gone in there. I think it was all done to get oil. I think that's the end result is going to be some oil agreement and to the loss of life that we had and to the cost of it was to me just a re-election move. And
now this is Jim Jeffords 3 or 4 years ago. Keep in mind, this morning Dick Cheney on a USS aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf threatening Iran.
They're going to try to live off it and probably start another war. Wouldn't be surprised next year, probably in Iran.
Do you think that's likely?
Oh, I probably shouldn't even talk on it. I just feel so bitter about the thinking that's gone on behind them and the reasons they go to war and went to war. But I feel very strongly that they're looking ahead and that there'll be an opportunity to go into Iran and try to get their son elected president. I don't know, but they'll do it each time they when I have a new president, but I'm very, very, yes. Oh, well, I better be quiet.
And at that point, Senator Jeffords censored himself. But, you know, he was seen down the road, Jeb running in 2008, based on a war in Iran. And, you know, I think Jeb has been put on hold for 4 years or maybe 8 years, but he will be back. The Bush dynasty will be back. It's pretty mind-boggling. It really and truly is. Douglas in San Diego. Hey, Doug.
Hi, Tom. You know, about 10 years ago, I had you as a guest on a radio program that I did back on Radio America. It's been a long time. My question to you, Tom, is what do you think the potential is for a coalition of independent voters, kind of maybe following the line of your previous guest, and actually voting as a swing vote, that you know, going a step further from what Ralph Nader or Perot did, not forming a party, but forming a power block of voters?
Well, I think it's happening. I think it's happening to a certain extent. I mentioned that I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000. That was a very difficult one. Louise and I lived in Vermont. We knew Vermont was going to go for Al Gore.
Yeah.
Louise voted for Al Gore. I voted for Ralph Nader because I wanted the Green Party to get that 5% so that they
could
get the matching money. I wanted the Green Party because the Green Party is doing such great stuff on the ground at the local level, and I think that that's really important. On the other hand, you know, had I lived in a swing state, there's no way I would have voted for Ralph Nader in 2000. I definitely would have voted for Al Gore. But the point is that I think that there are a lot of folks out there who are relatively independently minded who really need to be, as many of us are, as I do, participating with the Democratic Party, showing up at Democratic Party events, which I do, and giving money to the Democratic Party, which I do, and at the same time keeping other options open. I also participate with the Green Party and have given money to Green Party events and have done fundraisers for the Green Party. So, you know, I think right across the board, and I have no problem with party loyalty. I think, you know, to people who are just, you know, solid Democrat all the way, that's a wonderful thing. That's a wonderful thing, and we need a lot of that in this country, or Republican for that matter, if they're people of goodwill. My inclination is to be a little more independent, but I think that there's a huge number of people, the majority of Americans, I think, when you really drill down, will define themselves as independent. And supporting a party, but ultimately voting for the individual candidates and voting on positions and issues rather than voting a straight party line. And frankly, I think that that's a healthy thing in America. Paul in Hudson, Florida. Hey, Paul, got about a minute before we got to take a break. What's up?
Yeah, when you're with Bernie Sanders, you know, when we talk about all these different issues, and the one thing that always comes up, you know, is a strategic point. It seems like everything you come up is because, all these important programs and changes we want to make, they're all hampered because of the lack of independence, because of all the lobbying and money and stuff. Seems like strategically the first thing is to make a huge reform and get all the money out of government, then everything else goes more smooth.
Right. Bernie has said that over and over and over again.
Good.
We need publicly financed elections as job one. The problem is that he can't get Republicans or Democrats to go along with him in putting that in front of the burner. And, but, you know, I agree with you. We're seeing it happen in Arizona. We're seeing it happen in Maine. We see it happen in my hometown in Portland, Oregon, where I live now and have for the last couple of years, and where we, you know, usually do our show from KPOJ. I think it's very important. It's absolutely vital, and we need to be talking about it. And that's another thing to call your member of Congress and the Senate and push for: public funding of elections. Let's have a voter-owned elections. Tom Hartman here with you, 45 minutes past the hour, broadcasting live today from KLSD, our San Diego affiliate, where we will be in an old town today at the Cosmopolitan Restaurant from 4 to 7. Back with your calls right after this, 45 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative, this is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
It's our Anything Goes Friday, taking your calls throughout this hour and next. However, Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service is with us with our daily report from Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So I have a couple of callers with questions for you, too, and I want to get to those as well. So what's the big news coming out of Washington, D.C. right now?
Well, the big news coming out right now is that a federal judge has ruled that Monica Goodling must give testimony in the Alberto Gonzalez Gate case. She, of course, is the former aide to Gonzalez and a liaison between him and the White House at the Department of Justice, and she knows a great deal about the firing of the 8, possibly 9, U.S. attorneys.
So Gonzo Gate is going to heat up.
It's going to heat up, although, quite frankly, I think he's keeping his job.
Yeah. Dan in Aurora, Colorado has a question for you relating to that. He's listening on 760 AM. Hey, Dan, you're live with Victoria Jones.
Thanks, Tom. The question I had to Victoria, I was just Tom was playing a clip of Representative Wexler questioning Alberto Gonzalez, and he asked him specifically, did the president put those names on the list?
Right.
And that was the only ones that Gonzalez actually said, no, he did not.
Right.
And my question is, doesn't that then take the whole contention of the Republicans that the attorneys serve at the pleasure of the president? The only way that they could say that is if President Bush put them on the list. by contention, since he did not, that means either they fired them on a whim or for political reasons.
Right.
Well, I think things, well, in Washington, things are more nuanced than that, I think. I see your point, and I think it's a very good one and a valid one, but I think that things are more weaselly and gray in Washington.
Well, also, the Department of Justice is under the president. It used to be a cabinet-level office. Now it's part of the Department of Homeland Security, which is a cabinet-level office. But the point is that all of those federal officials at some point serve at the pleasure of the president. But if the president doesn't fire them, but delegates that, the question, I don't know if you saw the testimony between Wexler or the grilling that Wexler gave Gonzalez.
I've seen some of the clips on YouTube.
And he just went through, this person, that person, this person, that person. Okay, that's all the people who could do it. Who did it then?
It's great stuff.
And he opens with, I know you and Carl Rove were discussing this, and Gonzalez goes, yeah. And the one question he never asked, and I think he didn't ask it because he knows that he's gonna ask Monica Goodlin this, is did Carl Rove, is he the guy behind this? Kevin in San Mateo, California has a question for you, Victoria.
Hi, Victoria. I wanted to ask you, as a person that really doesn't approve of this trade deal that Charlie Rangel went ahead and passed and feels no reservations about it, who were the other Democrats that voted with him? And who was key on that particular legislation?
On the trade deal?
Yeah.
That is something that I have not been involved in, I'm afraid. I'm too involved up the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue. I have not been involved in that.
Okay. I'll have to track that down. It's interesting. I had Charlie Rangel on this program about 2 months ago. We were talking about his draft idea. And then I said, Congressman Rangel, back in, for 200 years in the United States, if a pair of shoes had a dollar's worth of labor and a made in the United States and you could make them with 20 cents worth of labor in China, we charge an 80-cent import tax called a tariff. In fact, tariffs funded this government 100% up until the Civil War, 60%, 65% up until World War I, 30% through the end of World War II of all federal funding came from tariffs. Why don't we simply go back to a tariff-based system? And all of a sudden, his phone stopped working. It's one of only two times in history that, when Dick Morris actually hung up on me because he was angry. I mean, because I mentioned the word prostitute, and Charlie Rangel just didn't want
to.
Yeah, and Charlie Rangel just didn't want to go there, and all of a sudden his phone got flaky. It was kind of weird. Anyhow, here's Patrice in Kansas City, Kansas, with a question for you.
Hi, Patrice.
Yeah, hello, thank you for being there. I am wondering if when all of us call our senators and representatives and request strongly that Harriet Myers and Karl Rove be put under oath in public, if it would be a good idea to also say that we would like our senators and representatives to follow up on Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington has a suit about the White House visitor logs. That it seems to me there's a couple of 500-pound gorillas in the room there with Gonzo, and one of them is those visitor logs, because as I recall, Melanie Swung said that crew had questions about who the religious, national religious leaders were who were visiting the White House during a certain period. And, of course, in the other 500-pound gorillas, those 5 million missing emails that we need in order to find out how those attorneys got on that list. But what do you think of this? Is there some reason to be look for our representatives and senators to investigate a connection between Gonzo Gate and those visitor logs?
I mean, I think that we can look for them to look for a connection, but I think for them to look for a connection, quite honestly, is more than they're capable of. For them to even stay on track with this one thing is quite an effort. For them to start making links and for it to get even more complicated, it's quite frankly, I don't believe going to happen.
We need a special prosecutor.
That's probably what we need at this point.
Yeah. Charlie in Brooklyn, New York, we have less than a minute before we have to wrap up this hour, Charlie.
Thanks.
I'm live with Victoria.
I just wanted to ask Victoria if she noticed the parallel strategy yesterday. Gonzo was saying he couldn't comment on whether he had spoken to Kyle Sampson or other Justice Department officials because it was an ongoing investigation. And when Scott McClellan used to say that, and even Bush regarding Valerie Plame, they couldn't comment because the investigation's ongoing.
Yeah, well, that nobody ever comments on any ongoing investigation. I've certainly noticed that, yes. And he still doesn't remember anything, yeah.
Right, so a great way to stop discussion of an issue that you don't want to talk about is to investigate yourself and then say that you can't talk about it because you're investigating yourself, which is what Gonzo's
doing. And if you could talk, you wouldn't remember anyway.
And he didn't! That's incredible.
Amazing.
Victoria Jones, an accredited White House reporter and congressional reporter, and you're accredited for a whole bunch of things, aren't you? Pentagon or something?
No, I don't have a Pentagon pass.
Okay. But all the other stuff.
All the other stuff.
With the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks, Victoria. Good talking with you. 57 minutes past the hour. Marianne Williamson up next.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Arise then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts. Whether your baptism be of fire or of tears, say firmly, we will not have questions answered by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands will not come to us reeking of carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons will not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We, the women of one country, will be too tender to those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. Julia Ward Howe, who wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic in 1870, as I recall. This is her Mother's Day proclamation. Marianne Williamson, one of the people really out in front of the issue of peace. Marianne, an old friend and ceaseless, I don't want to say warrior for peace, it's a terrible mixing of metaphors, but advocate for peace. ThePeaceAlliance.org, and of course her website, Marianne.com. Marianne Williamson, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much, Tom.
Great to have you with us.
Always great to be with you.
Thank you. Tell us, Mother's Day is coming up, and what I just read was the first stanza of Julia Ward Howe's Mother's Day Proclamation. This really started in 1870 as the Mother's Day of Peace.
Yes, and before that, Anna Jarvis. Of course, these were women who basically what happened was that the mother of a fallen soldier from the South in the Civil War got together with the mother of a fallen soldier from the North, and together they decided that there should be this day to commemorate peace, where women not only from all across the United States but from all across the world would get together and declare, much as you just read from Julia Ward Howe's amazing proclamation, that we would create a world in which there was no longer war. And I think, for me, there's something here about the way that idea has so devolved to something so hallmark, that Mother's Day is the day you take your mother out for lunch and you send her a card and you send her roses and all those things which, in and of themselves are lovely. But it's one more example of dress her up, but don't really listen to what she has to say. And that's why I think reclaiming the initial impetus and the original meaning of Mother's Day really speaks to a lot of women today. Like that's, the fierce mother archetype is really what we're all about today.
So how do we do that, Marianne?
Well, I think we heal by noticing, don't we, Tom? I mean, things that you've said to me, that others have said to me, and I'm sure this has been in your life, you read something here, you hear something there, you experience this or that, and ultimately it all comes together in something that's genuine consciousness. I don't know if you were the one who told me this. I don't think you were, but someone who once pointed out to me that a common characteristic in all advanced mammalian species that survive and thrive is the fierce behavior on the part of the adult female when she senses a threat to her cubs. Even hyenas, when adult female hyenas circle the babies while they're feeding and won't let the males anywhere near the food until the young have been fed. And I ask myself, surely the women of America could do better than the hyenas.
Yeah,
and you see, what you see is that in the advanced mammalian species, where the women do not show up with the fierce mother aspect, this is from an anthropological perspective, this is a species not intending to survive. So there's this awakening, and I think that as we as women do more and more excavation, it's one of the reasons I've always been so interested in the witch burnings and their sort of psychological effect. You know, with, among African Americans, there's a phrase, holdover, like holdovers from slavery, behavior that you wouldn't out of context understand where it came from, but then you recognize that it made sense hundreds of years ago and people just didn't stop doing it. Same thing with women in the witch burnings. We were so, we were threatened, you know, any show of our fierceness, our passion, our power was likely to get us labeled witches. And today, it's liable to get us labeled bitches. You know, we've changed the consonant from W to B. So I think women are doing the work internally now to recognize that we're not afraid of owning our voices. You don't have to be strident when you do that. You don't have to be... You can be feminine and be powerful at the same time. And I even notice among some younger women, I was saying last night, Tom, I see a sort of younger generation of women, very beautiful, very dressed, very hip, very glamorous, among whom it's become cool to be mature. And I think, you know, that's success.
Yeah, indeed. And the Peace Alliance, which you're very involved in, peacealliance.org, T-H-E, Peace Alliance, thepeacealliance.org. Website is, you, in fact, you're the chairman of the board of that, or the chairperson, chairwoman of the board of it, and the Peace Alliance is calling for some specific action around these issues.
Well, and you, of course, as a member of that board, you know that there is in the House of Representatives now there is a piece of legislation that would establish a cabinet level Department of Peace. It's H.R. 808, and this, which now has 60 some odd congressional co-sponsors at the moment. This would create a cabinet-level position whose job would be to articulate, facilitate, and research nonviolent solutions to both domestic and international conflict, just as in the last few decades we've learned holistic methods that augment and complement and are integrated with allopathic Western techniques. We need the same kind of holistic paradigm shift when it comes to politics and society, because right now we are strictly, practically strictly allopathic. You wait till violence erupts, and if it's domestically, you try to put people in jail, and if it's internationally, you try to use military power to either suppress or eradicate the symptoms. And in medicine, we've become far more sophisticated. People want to deal with causal issues. Where did the disease come from to begin with? And also to proactively build health. You don't just wait till you get sick. And I think that same kind of paradigm shift is now occurring with war and peace. Peace is more than the absence of war. There's so much we can do to strategize for peace. So this piece of legislation is so urgent and so important because it would give, with a cabinet level position, it would create institutional heft. It calls at present for 1% of our discretionary budget to give real institutional heft to this extraordinary plethora of expertise that's really burst forth over the last 20 years in peace building and peace creation, whether it's nonviolent communication skills, peer mediation, conflict resolution, extraordinary capacities that we have that are proven best practices techniques, both domestically and internationally, that can help turn this world away from the profound and increasingly insane militarism that literally threatens the survival of the human race.
Indeed. We're talking with my old friend and one of my favorite people in the world, Marianne Williamson, thepeacealliance.org, the organization, in the context of Mother's Day coming up, but also we're looking around the world here, Dick Cheney this morning on an aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf threatening Iran. It's like it never ends. Do we one of the things that the Peace Alliance has called for is a peace academy to teach peace. How about as a starting point just having classes on peace in the military academies?
Well, you know what's interesting is how much of this stuff actually exists, little pieces here and there. I mean, Donald Rumsfeld, for that point, several years ago, talked about how part of the mission of the Defense Department needed to be peace creation. So I've been surprised to see how many places, Defense Department, Justice Department, State Department, you see some shining light of higher consciousness and peace-building mentality, but I liken it to... You know, it's a little piece of broccoli compared to this huge steak that the other guys are given. So when you're spending $600-700 billion a year on your military, and then you're spending, you know, 50,000 here, 100,000 there on peace building projects, it's that's not quite enough. So you're right. We do want to begin wherever we can begin. But I would actually be willing to guess, Tom, based on everything I've seen, a class such as you just mentioned, I'm telling you, it probably already exists. There are some very conscious people in the military. I mean,
yes.
you know.
Well, look at Dwight Eisenhower. I mean, he was a tireless champion for peace.
That's because he saw war. That's because
yeah, exactly.
he saw war. You've got the vast majority of Republicans, with all due respect, the most Republican leaders have never served.
Yeah.
George Bush has never served in the military. So you know, you're dealing with a situation here where the people who really know war detest war. That's what made Eisenhower a great general. He hated war. He'd seen it firsthand. And some of these people act like it's a little boy's set of Legos.
Yeah, Bush had been in the Air National Guard, but he'd never seen combat. And it's a very your world really changes when you watch someone die. I mean, it's just die by violence. It is a profound experience. And not at all like in the movies or on the old westerns. Marianne, I'm sorry we're out of time, but your point is so well made. And let me just once again recommend that thepeacealliance.com and Marianne.com, or excuse me, thepeacealliance.org and Marianne.com. Marianne, thanks for being with us.
I love you, Tom. Thanks.
Thanks so much for being on. It's great talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We'll be back with your calls on Anything Goes Friday in just a second. Stick around.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio.
Friday, 21 minutes past the hour. Just real quick, the second half of Julia Ward Howe's Mother's Day Proclamation in 1870, the original Mother's Day for Peace. She says, from the voice of a devastated earth, a voice comes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe our dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them solemnly take counsel with each other as the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, each bearing, after his own time, the sacred impress, not of Caesar, but of God. In the name of womanhood and humanity, I earnestly ask that a general congress of women without limit of nationality may be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient and the earliest period consistent with its objects, to promote the alliance of the different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international questions, the great and general interests of peace. Jerry in Long Island, New York. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, I say amen to that. And there are primarily two main ways for Congress to end what obviously started out as an immoral war, now has turned into an immoral and unjust occupation in Iraq. And obviously Congress has taken off the table one of these ways, which is to completely cut off war funding. And therefore, that's why I think it makes it even more imperative that we, the American people, not let Congress take off the table the other main way for Congress to end this U.S. military involvement in Iraq, which is to impose on Bush binding timelines for withdrawal of all troops from Iraq starting this year, as 60% of all Americans want, according to the latest USA Today Gallup poll. And I would start first with the National Guard troops. I mean, if you look at what happened in Kansas with the tornadoes,
Yeah, exactly, Jerry. Or New Orleans. I mean, for that matter, if you look at what happened in New Orleans, where these soldiers were not available, they're bringing in Blackwater into New Orleans because the National Guard is off in Iraq. Uri in Portland, Oregon, or is it Uri?
Yeah, no, it's Uri. You got it right.
Hey, Uri, what's up?
You know, I hope I get this point across clearly. I think we always spend so much time discussing the logistics of the pullout of the war and all that, and really I think we miss the point in not focusing on the fact that it's chaos by design. They have no intention to end this war and end whatever you want to call it. It's a cash cow that they just want to continue milking for as long as they can.
Yeah, this is a subject we had a guest on yesterday talking about, how there is an entire war support industry, an entire industry that would cease to exist if war stopped.
I mean, they truly value, you know, money over life, especially when it's people that they don't know, they don't see. You know, it doesn't really make a difference to them. And the fact that we spend all the more time that we spend discussing, you know, what we feel are the important issues, but really missing the point of the criminal acts that are being taken place, it works to their advantage. It just becomes a smokescreen. I mean, the war itself or the occupation itself is a front.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, Uri, and there are huge economic interests at stake here, and we need to do something about that as well. We need like Harry Truman again, you know, with a commission looking into who's profiting off war, and we need to make war profiteering considered. We need to regenerate the consensus that war profiteering is a moral crime. Harvey in Berkeley, California. Hey, Harvey.
Hi, Tom. In celebrating Mother's Day, I just want to say Earth is Mama. Let's work with her instead of against her. Let's get solar. And I have a great reason to cover our residential rooftops with solar electric roof shingles and solar electric panels. A company called A123 Systems, that's A123 Systems, you can look them up on a123systems.com, is the nanotech lithium battery company that joined with General Motors to produce the Volt, the plug-in hybrid electric Volt. Well, it just so happened that A123 Systems just bought a company called High Motion, that's spelled HYMOTION, highmotion.com, and it says here that A123 Systems today announced it has completed the acquisition of High Motion, Inc., the leading fabricator.
Is this an ad, Harvey?
Well, no, I'm just telling you.
What's the point?
I'm just telling you here that the High Motion is they retrofit all hybrids with new lithium-ion batteries so that all coming-out hybrids can now become plug-in hybrids. And
oh, that's great. Okay, I'll have to check that out. As the driver of a Prius, I would love to be able to convert my car into a plug-in hybrid, although I've got an older one. I think I had a 2002 or 2003, whatever the second year that they were out. And I'm not sure that those older ones, you know, qualify to do that. I mean, there's a company down in California that does that, but it's like 10 grand or something to convert the, you know, Prius or many other hybrids into plug-in cars, and it takes a long time to amortize that to get that back, and it's a little outside our budget right now. But yes, absolutely. If we had solar panels on our roofs, and if we had plug-in hybrid cars, where we could use our house as a power source for our car to a certain extent, and for that matter, sometimes use our car as a power source for our house when needed. I mean, there's just an incredible possible synergy here between transportation and housing. Although that doesn't in any way diminish the need for us to be focusing on better mixed-use housing and public transportation as well. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Increasingly, we're seeing what's going on with the entire, I don't want to say the entire corrupt Republican machine, because there are some good Republicans out there, but so much of it has been so badly corrupted. It's amazing. And by the way, join me in Dubrovnik, Croatia, for the Praxis Peace Conference, June 3rd through 9th. Louise and I will both be there. Flying over to Dubrovnik, Croatia for this conference. It's called Transforming Culture from Empire to Global Community. Rianne Eisler, Tom Hayden, George Lakoff, David Corton, Francis Morlapay, Swami Beyondananda. A whole bunch of great folks are going to be there. The itinerary, the agenda. You can find it all over at praxispeace.org, P-R-A-X-I-S, peace.org. And for our listeners here in San Diego, from the place from which we are broadcasting the program today, the studios of KLSD, and thanks so much to the folks at KLSD for the use of the studio, we will be having a listener party this afternoon from 4 to 7 at the Cosmopolitan Restaurant in Old Town, sponsored by San Diego Kitchen and Bath. Free appetizers and other KLSD hosts will be on hand as well. There's several local programs here and chances to win all kinds of KLSD goodies. So check it out and be there or be square, as they say. Richard in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, good morning. Keep up the good work. I just wanted to I had a question on Monica Goodling. If she's being offered immunity, what prevents her from lying?
Prison.
If they find out she's lying.
That's right. If you, and they will. If you lie when you are immunized, the penalties are draconian. I mean, they're really severe.
Yeah, I think I saw Armageddon. Sean Hannity and Dick Morris, continually on the tube. Anyway, I'll leave it at that, Tom. Let somebody else get on. Thank you very much for the info.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Richard, for the call. Wayne in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Wayne.
Hi, Tom. I've come up with an idea to facilitate the passage of hate crime laws. And you've inspired me with your explanation of hate crimes as crimes intended to intimidate or frighten a group of people as well.
Yeah,
as
I consider them terrorism, domestic terrorism.
Exactly. I would suggest that any criminal act that's intended to cause fear or intimidate a group of people be labeled an act of domestic terrorism and receive a sentencing enhancement. And substituting the term domestic terrorism for hate crime would be both more accurate, and it'd be awfully hard for the Republicans to argue against it.
Yeah, good point, Wayne. Well said, and I totally agree, and hopefully some good Democrats are listening and will pick up that meme and run with it. Marianne in Arcata, California. Hey, Marianne.
Yes, good morning, Tom. Good to speak to you. And I'm calling about that account of the Niger forgeries and that break-in in the Nigerian embassy in Rome, Italy. And I don't hear anything more about that. I heard it on your program.
Yeah.
And, you know, Scott Pelley's interview with George Tenet on 60 Minutes about 10 days ago, he actually ran that clip from Mr. Bush's State of the Union in January of 2003. And the only thing they talked about after that was the fact that Mr. Tenet said that he had never read the speech before Mr. Bush went on the air, but they never questioned then why that should be brought up. And so I never hear anything more about those things. And I think if that's true, you know, we need to carry on that conversation or that dialogue. It's another outrageous act.
And we are here at Progressive. Good point, Marianne, and well said. And we are carrying on that conversation in Progressive Talk Radio, and hopefully it'll be picked up. The problem with the mainstream media, and this is the problem with major corporate media, where you have media stars, not reporters, but stars, people who are paid, you know, eight-figure salaries in some cases, is that they don't want to lose access to the White House. And the media corporations making hundreds of millions of dollars on their so-called news operations, on their infotainment operations, they don't want to lose access to the White House. And so the really tough questions don't get asked repeatedly. And frankly, I don't have access to the White House to protect, nor a seven-figure salary. So we can talk about it here all we want, and we will across Progressive Talk Radio all the time. I think this is important stuff. When Silvio Berlusconi came over to the United States and gave to George Bush the original forgeries that were done on letterhead that was as you pointed out, Marianne, obtained by breaking into the Niger embassy in Italy and put together apparently at Berlusconi's request. There's an entire book about this out now. We had the author on this program a few weeks ago. Put together this forgery. Bush turned it over to the CIA. They came back and they said it's a phony. But Cheney wanted to use it, or Doug Feist, somebody in the White House wanted to use it so badly that they recycled it through British intelligence, and the British intelligence even said, yeah, it looks to us like it's a forgery, but at least they could say it has come to the attention of British intelligence. And it was a lie. It was another lie that was used to get us into an illegal war that has then led to a four-year illegal occupation that is leading to the death of many, many, many hundreds of thousands of people, tragically, tragically. Justin in Woodland Hills, California. Hey, Justin.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Just thanks great. I'll get better.
Okay, great. You know, first time, I'm glad you're here on KTLK. I think your show is fabulous. My question is why isn't more people in the mainstream media reporting about the Iraqi parliament vote to give actual timetables for withdrawal and benchmarks to get out of Iraq? And that comes from supposedly a sovereign nation that, you know, George Bush has touted and pretty much everyone in the GOP has touted as being their sovereign now, and we have no control over them. But yesterday or 2 days ago, I believe, they voted 144 for the majority to set benchmarks and timetables to remove the U.S. troops from there. And I don't understand why it's not getting reported more. And what do you think? Should we follow what they believe as a sovereign nation? Should we actually listen to them, or should we just tell them no?
Well, yeah, obviously I think that we should listen to them. We should attend to a sovereign nation's will, particularly one that we're occupying. But, you know, yes. As to why the mainstream media is not participating in sharing the word on this, that's a good question. A conspiracy theorist would point out that most of the mainstream media either is directly in the war industry or is related to the war industry by interlocking boards of directors. If you go over to theyrule.net, theyrule.net, you'll find some fascinating associations between defense companies and our largest media corporations. That may be it. It may be that because it was a non-binding resolution, the mainstream media has not, you know, doesn't consider it like a big deal, and a binding resolution coming along would be. I can't speak for NBC, ABC, CBS, MSNBC, et cetera, but I think it's a big deal. And I've reported it on this program, and I think, you know, right across the board of Progressive Talk Radio, you are hearing it talked about. There's a deafening silence about it, though, in right-wing talk radio, tragically. Robert in San Francisco. Hey, Robert.
Yeah, Tom, you know, health care freedom is an important issue. The pharmaceutical cartels, if we go ahead and have a national health care plan, what's going to happen is their paradigm is going to be promoted and perpetuated. The naturopaths and people like Otto Warburg in the 20s, this famous germ scientist, discovered that oxygen and ozone can create most bacterial and viral diseases. And recently, famous investigative journal, Dead in the Cave, has written the book, Flood Your Body with Oxygen, a 600-page
book. Right, Robert, your phone is breaking up pretty badly. B, I'm not sure what your point is.
Well, my point is we need health care freedom. We need to break the monopolies on the pharmaceutical petrochemical cartels and promote alternative treatments for a variety of diseases, which are the treatments which are now banned in this country.
Amen. Amen. I absolutely agree. And not just the ones that are banned, the ones that are largely ignored. I mean, there are a whole variety of conditions that can be treated very, very effectively, and any naturopath will tell you about this, in ways that don't involve buying pharmaceuticals from the drug industry. And they're just, you know, just by and large ignored. In many cases, nutrition, for example, is not even taught or is only minimally given lip service in our medical schools. It's tragic. Kathy in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Kathy.
Hey, Tom. Such a great show. About voter-owned elections, I just wonder, I heard this from somewhere, we should do something to make lobbyists pay a fee or a tax for access to the representatives. And that would be the money that we could use to have voter-owned elections.
I wouldn't, you know, I would, first of all, anytime you start restricting the access of anybody, including a lobbyist, tragically, to our elected officials, you're infringing on the intent of the First Amendment, which is to have the maximum amount of political free speech. So, A, I'm not sure it's a good thing, and B, I'm certain that the Supreme Court would not allow it. But voter-owned elections, it's not that much money. If we have about 100 million taxpayers in the United States, I think it's 115 million people who are employed and pay taxes. And if everybody, so just to use 100 million as a round number, if everybody were to check off a box that said, yes, take $10 a year from my tax, you know, and add it to my taxes to pay for national elections, that's, you know, 100 million people times $10 is $1 billion a year. That's $4 billion every 4 years. Only $2 billion was spent in the last presidential cycle. We could pay for all the presidential elections, all the senatorial elections, all the House elections, all the federal elections with that. And then every state could do the same thing with just $10 in each state. And we could have voter-owned elections. We do that in Portland, Oregon. It works very, very well. It's a variation on that. And it's increasingly being done in Maine and Arizona. I think that voter-owned elections, where we, the voters, are paying for the elections, And as I said, it's a pittance is really the way to go, because then the lobbyists will show up at the offices of the members of Congress and say, hey, I want to give you some money. And the member of Congress says, why would I want it? I don't need it. It's illegal to take a bribe. I can't take a free boat. And I don't have a campaign fund because it's paid for by the government. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
Trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
A special thanks to my producer David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Mike Dirks, to the folks at Air America who help make this program keep it going, Julian Sukman and Lauren Kirshner, Chris Lopresto, to Ben and Shelby over at White Rose Society, RadioPower.org, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Thank you so much. We would not have it without you. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Dan in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Dan.
Hi, Tom. Hey. I was thinking that when you made the comment that stick with your party affiliate, I would have to disagree on that one aspect, because, it's like Germany. I was, a young boy during the Second World War, and sometimes you have to vote your conscience and go against the grain.
But what I'm recommending is that even though people maintain a spirit of independence, that they participate within the particularly within the two-party system in the United States, and then broadly within the other parties as well. There's nothing to prevent somebody from showing up at a Democratic Party meeting and showing up at a Green Party meeting and participating in both and being active in supporting both financially. And then when it comes to time to make a vote, making a vote based on what's going to be the most practical, appropriate, what's consistent with their beliefs, all those things that go into it. What I think is a tragedy is when people do none of the above. They think that just voting once every 2 years or once every 4 years is enough. It's not enough.
Word of praise. I sure love to see you sit at the table with Charlie Rose and maybe throw in Bill Moyer.
Bill Moyers and I have talked on this program several times. In fact, he's going to be a guest on the program again in two or three weeks, and he's a great guy. Charlie Rose I've never met, but he does a great program. Thanks for your kind words. John in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, John.
Yes, Sam. A Bush came today to a school to give a speech in the students are going to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of objection to him coming here, but mm-hmm. I listened to his speech, and I'm a Roman Catholic, and something I really took objection to. What he said was he stood up there on his hind legs and he said, you know, and I went and I held the hands of this soldier who was dying. And when the soldier looked up at me, there was nothing but gratitude in his eyes. And then he immediately went on to say, and the same as his Mother Teresa, who looks after the sick, and this is the Lord's work and all that sort of stuff. But there is a there's a tremendous difference. The sick which Mother Teresa tended to is because of the Lord's will to have those ill disease visit on this, on those guys. But the precious soldiers, he caused them to be killed and disabled, etc. And in any case, you know, there is a central doctrine of the Roman Catholics that say, thou shalt not kill.
Yeah.
And goddamn, and this guy, you know, what can I say?
And, yeah, no, and, you're spot on, John. And in fact, the Catholic Church, you know, liberation theology came out of the Catholic Church in part, and the Catholic Church has long been at the forefront of arguing against wars, against capital punishment, as a pro-life position. In fact, the phrase pro-life for several generations, for the better part of a century, meant anti-death penalty. It got hijacked in the late in 1979, I think was the year, it got hijacked by the anti-abortion group. But pro-life was always, and it came out of the Catholic Church. Well said. And I'm astounded that Bush is comparing himself to Mother Teresa. That's mind-boggling. Helen in Portland, Maine. Hey, Helen.
Hi, Tom. It's a real honor to talk to you. Listen, I'm a Mother's Day reclaimer. I'm organizing an event up here in Portland, Maine, to reclaim Mother's Day. And I just wanted to let your listeners know about a couple of websites that can tell them where they can go to find out whether or not their community is holding a Mother's Day event.
Great. Thank you. Do so, please.
Mothersactingup.org.
Mothersactingout.org?
Mothers Acting Up.
Acting Up.
Up.org.
Okay.
Yep. And Code Pink also is hosting a number of events around the country.
Sure, which would be CodePink.org.
Yep. And women, there's also an action that's going on concurrent with these as well. Called if you go to womenstanding.org, you'll see that there are events happening all over the world at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time where women or people can stand for 5 minutes in silence to just observe peace and to think about peace and to project that out into the world. And so I hope that there'll be a lot of participation in that.
I hope so, too. Helen, thank you for what you're doing, and thanks for sharing the good word and getting it out there. We do need to take back Mother's Day and this country and the whole ideas, you know, the ideals, frankly, on which this country was founded, which were anti-imperialistic. George Washington's farewell address, avoid foreign entanglements. Where has that gone? So it is time for us to be considering peace as a positive force, as a real force in the world. Thanks so much for being with us this week. I'll be back in Portland, Oregon on Monday, broadcasting from our home studio, KPOJ. And remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.